All right, today, starting another series today. This is on fixing bad church culture, part one. Not controversial at all, so. This one's on fixing bad church culture, part one, caring about the sinner, not just the sin, is the title. Caring about the sinner, not just the sin. You know, a lot of times we talk about changing church culture, and not repeating all the things that we may have experienced. You know, the church has had its ups and downs. It's had great things happen over the years. It's also had some bad treatment of people and bad things that have been part or swirling around. And a lot of people leave for different reasons. Some are their own reasons. Some are church reasons. There's a mix of things. But we just talk about not doing the same thing. But we don't change the way we do things with each other sometimes. And we don't change what's rooted in that or what's behind it. You know, I have a question for you. You know, if we lived and implemented the Bible as it says and is exactly how Christ showed us how to live, would we have ever had the church cultures of the past? If we did things the way Christ did, if we actually looked at that, how he lived and implemented his law, would we ever have the church culture we've had of the past? The answer is no. The answer is no. We never would have. We wouldn't have had that. Church culture and changing it is not just a process and procedural thing. It's not a organizational structure. It's not a government. It's not things like that. Changing church culture is a spiritual matter. It's spiritual in nature. It has to do with understanding what the Bible really says and actually doing what the Bible really says is how we change church culture. The problem comes in, and I think in the past, is where we apply our own reasoning to what it says there, our own ways, our own methods, our own things, and justify it from the Bible. And that's backwards. If we were to do what Christ did and live as he did, we wouldn't have the same things that we've had in the past. So at its core is us not actually acting according to the Bible, is us not doing the things that are laid out in the Bible to the full intent of them. If we do follow that, we will fix church culture. It's a spiritual issue at the core. So let's cover some of these. It's not a mysterious formula. Let's go through what's behind some of the things that we've experienced, and let's figure out how Christ taught us how to do them, and really just think about that deeply. The first one we'll look at is how we view sinners and sin. I have a question for you as we start this. What does God care most about? The sinner or the sin? What does he care most about? What does he spend more of his time with and around and talking and doing and working with? The sinner or the sin itself? A follow-on question to that is what do you and I care about the most? The sinner or the sin? What do we spend most of our time talking about, focusing on? The actual person or the sin itself? What do we spend our time and our focus on? What did Christ spend his time talking about and focusing on? And when we ask these two questions, it's very important for us to open our minds and ask ourselves, you, not the person next to you, but you yourself, which one of these sides of the equation do I fall more on? Am I more like how Christ treated it, or am I more like how humans treated it? And we'll see in the Bible, there's very clear examples of what I'm going to talk about today. There's very clear scriptures. There's very clear guidance. It's not ambiguous at all about how we treat and look at these things and how we focus on and what we focus on. One of the things that we picked up during this holiday season is back in 1 Peter 2:24. 1 Peter 2:24. During the Passover, we learned something here about Christ, his sacrifice. It says in 1 Peter 2:24, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. And what we find is we focus, when we look at the Passover sacrifice, we focus on the bread and the blood and the foot washing. There's also something that's mentioned in here that's called the stripes. The stripes as in he was beaten, severely beaten. And what was that for? That was for what's called healing. By his stripes you're healed. Now, you could say that literally, hey, I'm heal physically of an ailment or something like that. But what it's talking about in the context, and if you read Isaiah, like it says here in 25, you were like sheep going astray, but you've returned. There's a whole set of things that happen around sin and its effects and things like that. And to heal means to not only forgive the sin, you know, the blood covers it and live by the body and the broken for us, but the stripes go further. It's like God is taking a step way further, not just, hey, I'm treating the sin and I'm just forgiving that, but I'm going to make that person whole again. The sacrifice is just as concerned with the underlying hurt and the pain behind a sin that Christ went the extra mile for this, the extra beating, and it's called out is that. The stripes were beaten. We only think physically, but it's talking much more about the emotional, the mental, the other types of healing that are around going astray and coming back. And that God is just as concerned with that underlying as he is with the sin. You can call out sin all day long, but what the sacrifice is saying is it completely goes all the way through to the person to make them back whole again. Not just, hey, I've identified you're a sinner, we've forgiven that. He goes on to say by his stripes, that severe beating he took, he wants to go and recognize the person and the pain behind the sin and heal that as well. There's a compassion here. There's a compassion for the reasons behind the sin, for the things that caused the sin, for the turmoil the person is in, for the things that swirl around in the head, for the effects of it, for what you bring on yourself, for what others bring on you, for all the things that swirl around it. There's a compassion for what goes on behind the sin. Do we take that same compassion when we work with other people? Or are we very quick to condemn? Yep, I can see it. You're a sinner, and there you go. That's what you are. And this is something for us to think about when we went through the Passover and we look at his sacrifice. But Christ dealt with sin in a complete holistic way and not just a, hey, you're a sinner, but I want to heal you from all of it. I want to go to the things behind. You know, some people repeat sins over and over. They're stuck in addictions. Drinking, drugs, porn, everything that's out there today, eating, anything you can't quit. Christ's sacrifice wants to address those things too. Not just, hey, let's look at what the outcome of that is, but let's go back and treat the thing behind it. Let's go back and get the healing going. What's causing you to do these things? Do we see each other that way, or do we just stop at the you're a sinner? We label somebody and quit right there. Yep, got it. Done. Or do we say, yeah, I know you seem like you're struggling, you're in pain, you're this. You know, love to, let's talk, let's work. You know, you care about the person, not just the sin. So I ask the question, when we look in the Bible, how did Christ deal with sinners? Did he just only focus on the sin, or did he also look at the person behind the sin? Let's turn back to Luke 7:36. Let's see an example, and we'll see this very clearly. What's so clear in the Bible is the contrast between how Christ did it and how the religious people of the day did it. So when I ask you the question before, as you read through this, honestly ask yourself, where do you fall more on the side of how Christ dealt with it or how the religious people of the day dealt with it? Those are two sides of this story. And I think if you're honest, we'll have to see where are we on this spectrum of dealing with people. So this is one. What was Christ more concerned about here? Let's figure that out. Luke 7, verse 36. It says, then one of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him. And he went to the Pharisee's house, and he sat down to eat. And behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of fragrant oil and stood at his feet behind him weeping. And she began to wash his feet with her tears and wipe them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with fragrant oil. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he spoke to himself, saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner. So what do we have immediately here? What did I say before? We have a label. That's what we have. This person didn't commit a sin. This person is a sinner. You notice the difference. this person, boy, if you knew what type of person that was, you would know that they're a sinner. And you can't be a prophet because you're actually, not only are you hanging around this person, you're letting her touch you. Because she's a sinner. You shouldn't be around those. Verse 40, Jesus answered, said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he said, teacher, say it. And then he gave a parable in verse 41. There was a certain creditor who had two debtors. So somebody loaned out and two people owed money, both of them. One owed a bunch, 500 denarii, and the other 50. And neither of them had anything which to repay. He freely forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him more? So the idea is that one owed a ton of money, the other a little bit, but they both had no money to repay it. They were both forgiven. And he's saying the one who owed the most is like, wow, I'm so thankful because he couldn't repay that huge amount of money. And Simon answered, obviously, I suppose the one who he forgave more. And he said to him, you've rightly judged. Then he turned to the woman and he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. So what's he focusing on? Again, what is Christ focusing on? He's focusing on the person who's behind the sin. I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore, I say to you, her sins. Did he ignore the sins? Or is he ignoring sins? Is he dismissing sins? Is he, relegating them to don't worry about it? He's declaring that she is a sinner and has sins. She has sins. So one side's declaring her a one-and-done sinner, and you shouldn't ever talk and be or touch. The other one is saying she has sins, but look at what she's done and look at her heart of what she's trying to do here. Right? Therefore, I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. They're forgiven. For she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Then he said to her, your sins are forgiven. So he dealt with sin. This is never excusing sin. Any of what we're talking about is never excusing sin. We're not changing the law to say there's no such thing as sin. We're not saying, oh, don't worry about sin. What I'm pointing out here is how do you and how do we interact with each other as sinners when we do sin with each other? How do we treat each other? And Christ addressed this topic so many times. So this is one of them, clearly right here. He forgave the sins, and then 40 those who sat at the table began to say, who is this who even forgives sins? And then 50 said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. So what is that last statement? That one's great. Not only are sins forgiven, what's he saying to her? I know that you may be completely upset and in turmoil, but what does he care about here? He's caring about her. He's saying, you know what? You're forgiven. Go in peace. Stop the turmoil. I care about this person. Do you see the difference in this approach? The difference here? One is, yep, I can see you're a sinner, and you are, and I'm going to not hang around you, and I'm going to declare that you're a sinner, and that's what you are. The other one is, yep, I know their sins, but I care about this person. I see you're trying, the crying, the washing, the faith in Christ, and their sins are forgiven. And be in peace. Go in peace because you're forgiven. Sin was dealt with in every single one of these examples that we read. But the process and the approach with dealing with the person is diametrically opposite. Guess which one of these produces hurt and harm and a lot of bitterness and things like that? And which one of these produces an overwhelming compassion, love, and desire to be around? Think about that. So when I ask you this, split this and think about it. How do you treat other people? Yourself, don't answer it out loud. Think about it. Which side do you fall? We pretend we want to say we fall on Christ's side, but what do we actually do? What do we actually do? And it's all the difference in the world. It's all the difference in the world of how the result comes out of it. And this whole thing is the story. So he dealt with the sin. He didn't ignore it. He acknowledged it was there, and she has many. But he also looked at the person. What did the Pharisees focus on? only that this woman is declared a sinner. You shouldn't let her near you. You shouldn't touch her. They didn't even see themselves as a sinner at all. And they harshly condemned the woman. They condemned her straight off, right? Christ focused on that, yes, she's a sinner. She knew she was a sinner. She loved Christ who forgives. She had faith in his sacrifice. And he cared about her as a person. And to stop sinning. And go in peace. To heal. The whole process. Which of these two do we do more? Which do we claim we do? And which do we actually do? That's what I want you to ask you. That's what I want you to think about. Because I said in the beginning, if you actually were to live and we were as a church in a body as Christ did, we wouldn't experience the things we have. We wouldn't have experienced them. Let's look at another example, John 8, verse 3. John 8, verse 3. Now, these are two examples of women. Just so you men know, it's not women are the only people who sin in the Bible. Just so you're not off the hook. These just happen to be two examples here. And if you think that, you've missed the point of this whole thing. John 8, verse 3. John 8, verse 3. It says, the scribes and the Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery, the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say? Then they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger, and as though he didn't hear. So when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and he said to them, Okay, he who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first. Again, he stooped down and he wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, why were they convicted? Because they realized that they're sinners. They went out one by one. They realized, okay, you're right. Beginning with the oldest, even to the last. So the oldest, as in the wisest, got the point first. The hard-headed young people who want to tell the world how it is again were the last to leave. But they finally got it. And Jesus was left alone and the woman standing in the midst. Now, how did he treat her? How did he treat this person? So she was caught. This wasn't an ambiguous framing. She was in the middle and they caught her. And they brought her, and that's a very, you think about it, wow, that's a big sin. They caught her in the middle of it. So, boom, hammer's coming down. So Jesus raised him up, and he saw the woman. He said to her, Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you? And she said, No one, Lord. And he said to her, Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Right? Then Jesus spoke to him, I'm the light of the world. He follows me, shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. You notice here, too, he didn't ignore the sin. He said, go and sin no more. Go and sin no more. Right? He always dealt with sin. It's never excused, never dismissed, never diminished. But what's the focus and the priority that he has? Is the person who's behind the sin. And he recognized, don't know what's going on here with this woman in her life and the things, but he cares about that. He cared about the things that are behind it. He cared about her. Not just the label, not just the sin you did, and not just the hammer coming down. And he did say, don't sin. But he cared about the person. He cared about the person. They were judging her because she was caught. They didn't get caught. And this is very interesting, too. And we find this a lot, is some people's sins are obvious. Some people's sins are obvious. You walk into church and you're single and pregnant. It's obvious. And guess what people do? They jump on that. There are people that walk into this church who do things in secret that nobody knows. Guess who sees that? Nobody. Guess who gets clobbered and who doesn't? And that's the exact same thing that was happening here. This is not how we treat these things. We treat them with kindness, with compassion. Just because you see some, other people have hidden ones. That's what it says. These guys, they realized, as Christ said, well, guess, anybody else doing anything? Raise your hand. That's what he said. And as they each thought about it, they go, yep, well, you're right. I'm doing it. I'm probably doing far, some of them were doing far worse, right? So they go, okay, yeah, this guy probably knows, and I'm going to back out of the room slowly, right? But you couldn't see that. Some people's sins are clearly there, and it says in the Bible, others are not. And someday you'll know those as well. But what we find here is very interesting is that Christ is always just as concerned about the person behind the sin and the why and why they're doing it and the compassion and the mercy there as he is with just the sin itself. He's not labeling this person as, hey, that's just what you are. He's never doing that. Why? Because every single person has the ability to change. No matter how far you've gone and how bad you've gone, you can still change. And Christ knows that, and that's what his power of his sacrifice does. And so sometimes people end up addicted, end up acting out, end up hurt, end up whatever the things are that cause people to repeat sins. That's not an excuse for sin. I'm saying whatever causes them to get into these cycles, Christ cares about just as much as forgiving the sin, because that's what the stripes are for, healing that stuff, cleaning out the gunk, helping it be at peace, helping it to be healed so that you come out of sin and that your heart knows it. You know, some people, you can tell somebody to stop sinning and they'll be like all in angst. You ever seen somebody like that? Oh, they're barely holding on. You're just white knuckling it because they're just going to slide right back into it. Christ says, you know what? I care about that white knuckling. Why are you doing that? Let's heal that. Let's figure that out. That's what he's saying. So you don't repeat it. You don't repeat it. So you can stop a sin, but you also have to address the underlying things that are there for it. And Christ knows this. We're human in our frame and how we work. There's other examples, like another one. Happens to be another woman. Woman at the well. Right? You remember the woman came and she's like, thirsting. And Christ understood what was going on with her. How do you know he understood what was going on with her? Because he said, hey, there's rivers of living water. He who drinks of these won't thirst again. He could tell that this woman was thirsting. Why? Because he called out. And he said, hey, go call your husband. And he's like, oh, because you don't have a husband. You've had five husbands, and the one you're with is you're just living with. And he knew that she was thirsting, that she was going through men, that she was, for whatever reason, in this perpetual repeat state. And that's why Christ called it out. You know, he cared about that. He said, if you drink of these waters, you won't thirst again, that I can heal this. The thing behind why you're doing this, I can heal this, is what he's saying to her. And that whole context is there in that whole, the way he's talking with her. He cared about that. It wasn't just, hey, I'm calling you out because you've got five guys. He goes, I know why you're thirsting. I can see you're acting out in this thirst. You're going through men like this. And drink of this, and you won't thirst. You'll stop thirsting. I can heal that. Right? That's what he was saying. And he always was concerned about the person behind. Another example. Oh, here's a man's example. Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel, right? Cain killed Abel. Man, you read that. How did God treat Cain afterwards? You know, we actually talked and, you know, Cain was like, oh, poor me. And people are going to, and God's like, okay, I care about you too. Sometimes you read that and that's hard, but you know why? Because it's not just the sin. God also cares about the person behind the sin. Two, God cares about the person just as much and more as the sin itself. He cares about the person behind the sin. We like to label people as sinners, as in they have committed something and they're forever a sinner. And they're destined to always be a sinner. So you know what? That's what you are. Like they are a bad person. They themselves are a sinner. Well, you probably haven't done that before. I haven't done that kind of a thing. You know, I've done a sin here or there, for sure. I once lied. That's all I can remember. You know, but look at you, your adultery and this and a whole bunch of, oh, you're just a big sinner. And we're glad we're not like those people and never going to hang around them. So if we apply that to us today, when we think about these things, what does that sound like? Man, I cannot believe how badly that person is screwed up in life, their life. The drinking, the drugs, the sex, this, the everything. Man, oh man, I'm so glad I am not a sinner like you. You're a sinner. What does that sound like when I repeat those words? Is exactly how the religious leaders of the day did. That's as a person. Do you know what they're like? Don't hang around them. Don't let them even touch you. Whereas Christ said something different. What did Christ say? Matthew 9, verse 10. Matthew 9, verse 10. This very subject that I just said in those sentences is addressed directly in the Bible. Matthew 9, verse 10. It says, now when it happened, as Jesus sat at the table in the house, that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. Uh-oh. Wow, you got the scum of the area, if you were back in the day, coming over and sitting at the table with Christ. 11, when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? There's your label. When Jesus heard that, he said to them, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Very important statements here. The religious people of the day said, do not associate, do not sit at the same table, do not. Christ said, those who think they're well don't need a physician. He didn't say they're well. Those who think they're well. He didn't call the righteous, those who are self-righteous, but those who know they're sinners. Those who know that they're struggling, those who know they're in a bad spot, he's come to talk and work with them, to bring them to repentance and to heal them. Somebody who does not think they sin does not care to be healed. What do they care to do? They care to let you know how great they are and how horrible everybody else is. That's what they do. And Christ says this here, learn what it means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I desire to, when somebody comes and is broken and repeating a sin and this, I want to show mercy. I want that person to be forgiven. I want them to feel it, to know it, to learn it, to overcome it, to get it, even if it's a long period of time. Versus, oh, I am going through the ritual. I'm sacrificed and I've got this, look how great I am. I'm doing my sacrifices. He wants that person to come out of a sin. He wants that mercy, that grace, those things to be there so that the person will eventually come out of the sin. That's what the goal of it is, not to keep them there. That's what he desires. He desires that process. He desires that process. For example, you know, this is getting to the intent of what God's laws are meant to do. So the intent means that I set up a law. Here's the intent of how it to be applied. The religious leaders took it and said, yep, adultery, this, like kachon. God says, no, the intent is like this. If you understand the intent, you won't condemn. For example, what if you have a homeless man who's hungry and steals a loaf of bread? Right? What would the Pharisees do? What would they feel entitled to do straight from the law? They would condemn the person. They would condemn them to the nth degree of the law, and that's all that they would do. They wouldn't lift a finger to actually help the person. Applying this principle, God would want what? God would want somebody to, one, help the man, to feed the man, to help the person, to talk to the person, and restore what they stole. But the person's in there. You see the difference? You deal with sin, but the person's first. The person's first. You remember David said he ate the showbread, which wasn't lawful, because he was starving and about to die. And it's like if that law overrides the person and everything about it and just that's it, it's missing the point of God's law. Not doing away with sin, but the person comes first. Christ's sacrifice isn't just to declare you a sinner. It's to help you out of sin. It's to help you. It's to heal you. So this way of thinking is based in what? Turn back to Luke 18, verse 9. Luke 18, verse 9. Luke 18, verse 9. We have to admit that we are sinners. We have to admit that we're capable of sin. Luke 18, verse 9 says, he spoke a parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and they despised others. Those two go together. When you think you're righteous, you don't sin, not capable of sin, you will look down on others. You may talk a good game, but you will look down on others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one with the Pharisee and the other is a tax collector. So one was the righteous, the other is the sinner. The tax collector of the day was seen as the IRS man. That's who that is. IRS man coming to your door, collecting all that money. You hate these people. And they would dip into it and everything else. They were the biggest scum of the day, if you want to use those terms. You have the religious person and the biggest sinner. The Pharisee stood and prayed in himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. Extortioners, all these sinners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this dude over here. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all I possess. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven and beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. What was the Pharisee doing? He labeled that person as what? A sinner. Straight off, a sinner. And he was what? He was performance-based. As in, my performance is what makes me great before God. You know, I'm doing so many great things. Can you believe all the things I'm doing? Look at that. I fast. I give tithes. Oh, man. As if that performance is what makes him good with God, is what this is saying. He thought that. Christ is saying, nope, nobody stands before me based on your own performance. Nobody stands before my throne and can declare their performance. You have to say, God, be merciful to me. I'm a sinner. And this is super important for us. Christ said, her sins are big, yours might be little, but none of you can be declared not a sinner. You're all sinners. And we have to be willing to say that. We want to rank these things. Christ said, doesn't matter if it's little or big, you can't repay. There's no way you can stand based on your performance. And this is what happens, is we start to think about ourselves in relation to others based on our performance. I am doing well. That person is really screwing up. You know what? I am, and if you read this, just read this statement out loud. That's what you're saying. You know what, God? I'm glad I'm not like that person who's screwing up their life. Thank you for saving me, and I'm glad I fasted and did this, and this worked out. And that's what that Pharisee was praying. Whereas you and I have to always recognize that we're sinners. And I don't mean, hey, I just did a little sin, you did a big sin. Do you know that if you're put into a situation like somebody else, you probably would do the same thing? You probably haven't been in somebody else's shoes, have you? You haven't been in their environment, the abuse they've gone through. You haven't been in the turmoil or the addictions or whatever has happened in their life as that person. You don't know. You could go, and if you went through the same thing, maybe you'd do it differently, but I guarantee you probably wouldn't. If you do not recognize that you would have the proclivity to sin, you're just declaring yourself as more righteous. We all should say, you know what? By the grace of God, I would go there. Probably, I don't know, I would go there. You know, none of us are predetermined in a way, but our environment totally affects us. And Christ recognized this. Some people were stuck. Some people had it great. You know what? But everybody has declared a sinner, has to be declared a sinner. Now, these two approaches are again called out. Let's read one more parable, how these two differing approaches are called out. And let's recognize a couple things here, the sin, sinner, and performance. Think about these two things. Turn back to Luke 15, verse 11. Luke 15, verse 11. Performance is something that we've kind of got ingrained with, and I think we get confused with, hey, we'll be rewarded someday with, you know, let's do good to others, with performance, how righteous we are based on how well we do. Those are not the same things. Luke 15, verse 11. He said to him, we know this parable. A certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood, took his whole inheritance. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. So he took the inheritance, went to Vegas, and did everything you could possibly do in Vegas, is what he basically did. All the slot machines, all the everything. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him a thing. But when he came to himself, he got this. How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? And I will rise and go to my father and will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.'" So, apply this today. Have you ever seen somebody do this? Do you know somebody who's gone off and self-destructed? Wasted their money? Destroyed themselves? Did everything, every possible sin? What if they walk back in? How do you treat them? You know what we have next? There's two ways to treat this person. Which one, I ask you again, does Christ do more? And which one do you do more? Verse 20 says, he arose and he came to his father. So he's coming back home, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and he had compassion. And he ran and he fell on his neck and he kissed him. And his son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight." And so he knew he was a sinner. "And I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to be merry. Is this how you would treat somebody who's done all of that? Again, I asked you the question, what is God more concerned about? Were the person behind? What was the attitude of the person behind here? They had recognized they had messed up, and they came back. They came back, and the father gave them the best robe and the rings and everything else. And they killed the best calf, and they ate it. And they celebrated this person. They celebrated. Now, 25, his older son was in the field. And as he came and he drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and he asked him what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf." But he was angry and he would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. So why was he angry? Because he had always been performing compared to his brother, who screwed up everything, right? What does he say? He says, "Lo, these many years, I've been serving you. I've never transgressed. I've never done anything wrong. Your commandment at any time, you never gave me a young goat that I might be merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came," this son, right? When you consider yourself righteous, you look down on others. This son, not his brother, right? When he came, who has devoured, who took all your money and spent it, your livelihood with harlots, prostitutes. You killed a fatted calf for him. So think about this. This is why I bring out the idea of performance. When you hang your hat on how well you are doing, and you don't say, "I am a sinner," this is how you treat others. When I say that the culture and the church is spiritual, this is what it means. These scriptures address it. Christ, how many scriptures have we read are stories of Christ and how he dealt with people and sinners and how many parables he said? He's dealing with this issue over and over and over. We don't change the culture unless we implement what he said and did, as he said and did it. Didn't dismiss sin, didn't minimize it, didn't make an excuse for it, but he cares about the person. So you see these two approaches. Somebody whose performance, how well they're doing, how much everybody else is a sinner. When that person comes back in the room, how do they greet him? One is mad and ticked. I cannot believe you're actually hanging around that person, actually celebrating it. What does God do? That person has come back. They were lost. They came to themselves. Man, they care about that person. They care about that person just as much as dealing with the sin, but the person behind it and what all that happened. And he said to him, "Son, you're always with me, and all that I have is yours." You know, he went out and lost it all. And all the blessings I have in this house and all the things that I have always been there for you. It was right that we should be merry and be glad, for your brother was dead. He's alive again. He's lost, is found. You see what God intends? God desires mercy, not just sacrifice. God desires that mercy to be there. This is how God treats people. Think about this for yourself. Yes, do you screw up in life? Have you screwed up multiple times? You know what? God is just as concerned and more concerned about you as a person and why that's behind it and healing that. By his stripes we're healed. That sacrifice covers that and heals all of that as he is dealing with the sin. He doesn't just stop with the reaction. Oh, you know, every time we sin, oh God, oh, deal with it, deal with it. That's just very reactive. God wants to fix and to heal. Why? Why you're sinning? And you come to yourself and get and go, wow, man, this has been a merciful creator and God to me, and I love, as that woman washed the feet, man, I cannot believe how much you've forgiven. I love more. This is how he changes a heart. You can stop a sin. This is what we do when we act like the Pharisees. You can stop people from sinning. You can have a group here that everybody comes and pretends they're all not sinning, but you don't fix the sins. They're all under the surface. Christ wants to fix and heal underneath. So performance-based is part of this. How well you're performing versus how well other person's not performing should never be part of our thinking. You know, I'm better. I should get bigger praise. I should get a bigger reward. I should get bigger everything because I didn't go do that. Think about the prodigal son. Or when that person walks back in, goes, you know, I have had the blessings and the hedge about me this whole time. And that person went out and they're back, and let's greet them with loving arms. That's the prodigal son parable. I think it's more written for you and I than it is the person out doing the other stuff at times. That's what I think when you read that, because that person's the bitter one. Who do you feel like, does that parable irk you at all? It used to irk me a lot. And I had to think about it. Why? Because I feel like, well, maybe I'm trying to be that guy and not seeing that I am actually capable easily in a heartbeat of being that other guy in the right circumstances. So the father was more concerned about the person. The person. He celebrated that. They're more interested in that. They want to heal the pain, the toll, the kindness, the mercy. The performance-based person who was doing well and the other person wasn't, completely condemned, completely condemned. You know, even when people are sinning against you, you know, there was a time, I'll just quote this in Luke 9, 51 to 56, right? When he was with the disciples and they rebuked him, right? And then his disciples came and said, Lord, you know, do you want us to command fire to come down in heaven and destroy these people? They're sinning against you. And he turned, he says, you don't know what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And that's the whole philosophy. He's not coming to condemn and destroy. The religious leaders of the day came to condemn and destroy that woman's life. You have a sinner walking here, man, I'm going to do everything to make sure everybody knows you're a sinner and how great I am. Or was Christ's work was to save them? He wanted to see them change and saved and come out of it. If you're performance-based, I'll just quote these. I won't go through it, or I'll reference them. If you're performance-based, probably some of these other scriptures will irk you as well. This is a test. Give yourself a test. Matthew 20, verse 1 through 16. Do you know what this one is? He sent laborers out into the vineyard, and they worked all day in the heat of the day. Worked and worked and worked and sweat and did the whole harvest, right? And he said, yep, you can receive this wage if you go do that. So they agreed to it. They went out and did and worked all day. And then some people came at the last second of the day, at the last hour. And they went out and worked, and when they all came in, he gave them the same reward. The same reward. And guess who was ticked? The people who had worked the whole day. Do you see why that parable's in there too? Do you see what Christ is poking in the eye here? It's the performance space where you stand on your performance versus other people. We all get eternal life. What if somebody comes at the last second and you go, man, I had to live a whole life that was super hard. It was horrible. It was the worst. It was, they come along and waltz in the last second, and now they have eternal life. This is not fair. Right? That's based on your performance. That's performance-based. And this, it's important to bring that out because every single one of those scriptures is somebody who's talking about how they perform versus how somebody's a sinner, how well they did versus how well somebody else didn't. You know what other parable irked them the day? Was the Good Samaritan. You know why? Why did the Good Samaritan irk the religious leaders of the day? Because the Samaritan, you remember the person was on the side of the road and the religious leader passed by, the other one passed by on the other side, they wouldn't go near, the person was beaten up. Who's a Samaritan? Of the day, they were really low scum dogs, the sinners of the day. So Christ purposely picked somebody up and said, the person that you think is the biggest scumbag of the society is the one who actually did the right thing. Why did that irk people? It's the same reason. Performance. They thought they were more righteous, and that person was down here. Are you beginning to get an idea here? Christ spoke about this. This is a spiritual issue. You want to change bad church culture, you have to study what he said, how he said for us to think, and how he acted. And if you don't do those things, you won't get those results. Which results do we get? More like the Pharisees, condemning, hard, harsh, this, and or do we get people who whose hearts are changed and want to and love, and maybe it takes them a long time. Maybe it takes them a long time, but so what? Then there's the parable of lost sheep. Hey, you got 99, you lose one, they go rejoice over that one. Who does that irk? The ones who didn't go astray again, right? The lost coin, he says this all in a row. These are all the same topic. He's saying it like three or four different ways. I lose one coin. Doesn't she go like sweep the house and seek out and go try to find that? And she finds it and then she rejoices and says, I found it. It was lost. The other 99 coins are irked, right? Or the other 99 sheep because they didn't go astray. Can you see what Christ is saying? It's so important for to have the attitude that he had, that the person, even what they did, is more important than just the sin. We stop and label a sin. We see a sin. This person's always that way. They're just this way. Or do you care about the person behind it? Can you imagine the day, back in the day, in the where Paul was? Can you imagine, think about this, how hard it would be. Saul, before he was Paul, was killing Christians. He was out going to churches, bring people out. He would kill them. All of a sudden, this guy gets converted and comes to your church. What kind of, if your son or daughter was killed by Saul and Paul shows up, how hard would that be? Think about that. You know, how hard would that be? Man, that is a tough one. How hard would it be for those people to pray to God? You know, that's a tough issue for sure. And you know what? God said to Paul, you know, I'm going to show you how much you're going to have to suffer for this stuff. You know, there is a justice with God. He helps people to go, okay, God's the one who takes care of this. But can you imagine trying to think about that person behind that? That's the most extreme example you could think of, somebody who's actually coming into your congregation and killing people, gets called and comes back in. Do you care enough about a person over time to actually go, wow, what an amazing thing that God has done, and this is very difficult, but I care about that person. So I've given you a number of principles, a number of scriptures to think about, and again, performance. So how do we fix this? Let me just give you four quick points in the end, just summarizing what I've said before. Just four quick points. How do we fix this? How do we fix bad church culture with what's in the Bible? Number one, don't ever say, I would never do that. Don't ever say, I would never do that. You're saying, I'm more righteous, so I would never sin like that. If you were put in different circumstances, you never know. You just don't know. We're all capable of doing things we never thought we would. Do you have the same abuse? Do you have the same background? Do you have the same environment, the same stresses as the other person? It's not excusing a sin. I'm just saying that some people are put into circumstances or environments where they end up sinning. They end up being so pushed over the top, and they get stressed, and they start drinking, and they start this, and addiction, and pretty soon they're stuck. So we don't know. If you're put in the same circumstance, you don't know. Never condemn somebody. Never condemn somebody. You're not excusing sin. It still is dealt with. But Christ cares about that person behind it. Number two, don't be performance-based. How well you are doing, how much better you're doing, how others are not living up to how well you are doing, how worse their sin is versus your sin, how obviously worse their sin is versus your hidden sin, how their performance causes you not to be around them and you look down on them. You and I do not stand before God based on how well you do. You stand before God because faith in the death of Christ covering your sins too. Christ ate with sinners because he wanted them to come out of the sin and to be healed. He cared about the person, not the label. You're forever a sinner. You're predestined to always sin. You've screwed everything up. He said, she has sins. She has many. But this person is loving, and look at this, and coming out, and go in peace, be healed. There's a big difference between those two. Number three, don't condemn a person because they have really messed up. Have patience with people in long-term sins. Give them encouragement. Give them space and time to overcome. God can make somebody stand. You can't hold them down. God will teach you this. If you try to bring somebody else down, he'll show you. I know I've seen this happen. It's happened in my life. When I start to look down, all of a sudden I slip and go, what happened here? And God lifts a person and he goes, wow, you have to realize God can make another person stand easily. Easily. And the Bible says some of men's sins are evident. Like I said, somebody shows up at church pregnant. You can't hide that. But it also says other men's sins are hidden and that will be made known one day. And it's super easy to condemn the ones you see, isn't it? That's not the right approach in the slightest. Yet others are doing things behind the scenes. And usually they're the ones who cast the stones first. You know? This happens in the news all the time. Somebody's out just ranting on a self-righteous, soapbox about this or homosexuality. I can't believe it. And all of a sudden they come out that they're caught as being gay themselves. Right? It's usually the person who's got some hidden thing that is the biggest, most vocal one who's, you know, condemning other people. Don't be quick to condemn. Have patience. Encourage to overcome. You're working and recognize sin, but the person's more important, and work with the person. Christ wants to save and not condemn. Why are you doing the opposite of what your high priest is doing? Why don't you ask yourself that? Hey, I'm doing God's will. Actually, you're not. You're doing the opposite of what your high priest is doing. Let me put it in plain terms. He's trying to save, not condemn, and you're doing the opposite of what work Christ is doing in somebody. Fourth, care more about the sinner and the person behind the sin, and don't just focus on the sin. It's super easy to focus on the sin, but it's not mature in the slightest in a spiritual sense. You're a sinner. You did this. I see it. It's spiritually mature to act like Christ and see the person in the pain behind the sin, care for that person, be with them, help them overcome, help them through the process. See the person behind the sin, the turmoil, the pain, the other things. Help them through those things. Pray for them for the healing of those things, so that they may come out of them. You know, some people have had to deal with so many hurts behind it, and then when they do and they're healed, they stop some of this stuff. This is what it means to be healed completely, start to finish. This is why it says, by his stripes you're healed. Not just dealing with just the sin and stops there, but goes all the way to the pain, the suffering, and everything behind. When we think about these points and these principles in the Bible, it's only when we do these things will we fix the bad parts of church culture. Only if we do these things.